the lever, crunk.
Wrong
the lever.
The content I missed.
It really fills my soul. Hey guys, welcome back to Book Talk Made Me, the podcast. Sorry, I just spit as I was saying that.
It's already messy.
Already messy. Well, welcome back to Book Talk, the podcast. We're keeping it messy. Messy, chaotic, and unhinged. But where are your book club besties? I'm Caitlin. We've got Hilda and Bridget here today.
Hello. Please don't cut me out, Zencaster, post-production.
Hello.
I think it took out my eyes last time.
They probably cut you out because you sound like a robot. Like, you sound like the like nice elevator lady. Like
sometimes I'm too high-pitched, so I can't go, hi, because then that gets cut out. I don't know. Makes me angry.
Just got to be, hello. Like, go really low with it.
Don't cut this out, Zencaster.
Well, your book club. We're your book club gang. Book. I can't. We're done. We're just skipping over that. We're your book tub. Gosh. Nope.
How much wine did you have?
I did say, I'm like, I almost opaked my glass of wine before we even hit record. So I we're just like
that low key wine.
This is the first episode after spring break, and apparently we forgot how to speak.
We forgot
I don't have excuse for the rest of the year for myself.
It's called Mercury retrograde.
It's
we can
Mercury
blame it on
retrograde.
Mercury retrograde right now.
And there was an eclipse yesterday. So, you know, it's a whole bunch of energy waves just hitting, bouncing us around in this world. But we're your pals. I feel like we've established that now.
We're your besties.
We're your besties. And we're going to be talking about book 3 in the Lady of Darkness series. And this one's called Lady of Ashes. So this is book 3. There's 5 books. I don't know why. I know we said 5 at the get-go, but I think maybe because I'm halfway through 4, I'm like, one more to go. And I kept thinking like the 4th was the one more. So to find out that there's a whole nother one, it's like, whoa, we've got way more story to wrap up than I thought.
Yes, because... Wow. Everybody talks in fucking riddles. Nobody tells you what is going on in this book.
Well, you know,
sorry,
I was reading
right into it.
I was reading this book and then I texted you guys. I was like, what book is this? You're like 3. And I was like, I thought we were reading 2. And then you reminded me that I covered 2 on the podcast. So then I was like, wait, what happened in book 1?
I think when you're reading these big chunkers back to back, they all just kind of merge together. It's kind of like the early days of reading Throne of Glass, where I was devouring them like one right after the other. So could you be like, what happened in book 3? I'd be like, I know.
I don't even know the name.
Yeah, it's just book 3. But all to say, we are covering book 3. So before we get into it any further, just want to go ahead and issue the spoiler warnings. If you haven't read books 1, book 2, surprise, this is book 3. So we're going to be talking about what happens in this book this is not going to be broken up. So it's the full shebang of what happened in this book. So if you have not read and don't want to be spoiled If you have not read and don't want to be spoiled, tread no further, my friend, because we're going to be getting into it. So spoiler warnings from the get-go. And we're going to try to keep it to just this book for the most part.
Discuss stuff that happens in books 1 and 2. We're definitely not going to be talking about book 4.
Do we remember what happened in books 1 and 2?
Who knows?
I remember
the
themes.
In here might just surprise us, and I'd say, hey, this was.
I remember the themes book. That pissed me off.
Which was happening in this book constantly.
Oh, yeah. Constantly. But we'll get into that. Let's get into the overdramatic, dramatic book synopsis. And I think we're finding sometimes that as we read these, we are always shocked. We're like, that is not the same book that I read. So we'll see if this one matches up. Prepare thyselves. She will not be the same as when she left. Fire and shadows. Scarlet Samaria knew the cost of her actions the day she sacrificed everything to keep her family, her courts, and her twin flame safe. At least she thought she did. When she discovers the cost was more than she could have ever anticipated, she finds herself once again forced to choose between saving innocence or saving the ones she loves. But this choice might just leave her so broken, even the stars won't be able to bring her back. Light and dark. Crown Prince Callan is more than happy to leave the Fire Court behind, along with the woman who chose someone else. But when he arrives home, he finds there is no escaping the world of darkness he has been dragged into. To protect his people and his kingdom, he is forced to enter into a dangerous deception that quickly turns into a game of cleverness and strategy, and he finds that he has allies in the most unexpected places. Beginnings and endings. Fae Queen Talwin Samiria has been waiting for decades for her cousin to return home. She is expected to find a kindred spirit. What she got was a brash assassin who does things her own way and flouts all traditional decorum. But she refuses to let Scarlet stand between her and what is best for her courts. She will play nice for now, but when it comes down to going after the true evil that resides across the sea and threatens her lands, she'll take it all and sacrifice everything. Everything hangs in the balance. One wrong move and the scales will tip. Only ashes remain. I had to throw in the dramatic hands.
The dramatic hands were killing me.
I loved this so much.
What I'm doing is this. It's like a hand in front of my face. Like a swipey swipe.
These are spirit fingers.
Yes. These are spirit fingers. Light and dark spirit fingers. These. Beginnings and endings. Like when someone does that thing where like half their face is like one way and then their hand goes down, it changes. That was the transition. You know, it's Miss Gershberg's ninth grade drama class is really coming into play right now. So you're welcome. I'll accept my Oscar.
I feel like next time we need to pull out the gloves. Get some like white gloves. Really pizzazz us up.
Next time we record this and put it on YouTube, it's worth it.
Yes. And you're right. Hilda wrote in the chat during that was one long ass book synopsis. And it really was. But I do feel that this one actually did encompass everything we read.
Felt accurate. This one, it was more accurate than the last book. Definitely.
Now, as we get into this book, I just want to say my thoughts and feelings. First of all, she gets an A++ for setting us up in the beginning of this book because we got a map. We get pronunciations and explanations of who these people are. And there's a playlist in the upfront. Sometimes we get a playlist, but it's at the end. I'm like, I didn't need to know that. I just wanted to know what's happening now. Now, I don't listen to the playlist when I'm reading, but I appreciate the fact that it's there.
I missed the playlist.
That's on Spotify.
But I appreciate those touches.
It was a nice touch. I figured, you know, I like this. I appreciate when she does the pronunciations of everything. She has some extra fun little things. So we have Soren Adija, your new book boyfriend. Have Veda Lairwood, conniving bitch. I'm like, yes.
Yeah.
Accurate. Yeah. Is he my new book boyfriend? He's not. This man has not made it to the list.
I don't love him.
He's kind of annoying. But he's then like again, one like, note. She's annoying.
They're both kind of annoying.
They both are. So let's talk about this book. For me, this was a bookends book. Beginning, I was captivated. I was like, I think I texted you guys. I'm like, ooh, I cannot put this down right now. I'm very into what's happening. Ending, captivated. This ended so good. I jumped immediately to the next book because I had to know what happened. The middle part was a bit rough for me. There was a lot of repeated themes and conversations happening in the middle that I could have done with a little less of.
Okay. You want to know how repetitive it is? I was listening to audiobook, you know, as I do sometimes, and I kept falling asleep. And every single time I woke up, it was technically a different part of the book, but the same thing was happening. I don't even know what her name is right now. What's the main girl's name? Scarlet.
Scarlet.
Was like, yeah, guys, I'll tell you everything you need to know. I won't leave you ever. Soren's like, okay, babe, I believe you. I trust you. Scarlet, oh, off to do my own shady shit and not tell anybody. And then they start it all over again.
Pretty much.
Yeah.
And then it's like, I didn't trust you. You didn't tell me the full conversation. Well, I don't trust you. You didn't tell me the full conversations. I thought we were past this. And then rinse and repeat like 3 times.
And I hate the part when she's always like, well, you think I'm going to tell you every little thing? You have a rude awakening. Bro, he's had a rude awakening 5 times already. Like, why are we still in this conversation? Grow up and move on or break the fuck up.
I know we questioned it in the beginning. Oh, Hilda, did you have something to add to that?
No. I think it got a little bit better at the end.
Oh, it did. As I said, the ending was very captivating.
No, this whole like miscommunication, lack of communication. I feel like it got a little bit better at the end, but it was annoying. It was annoying.
I just don't know how like you can carry on miscommunication trope for 2+ books.
Yeah.
That's a lot of filler.
It was. I'm trying to think back to, I mean, I don't want to keep comparing it to other books, but I'm like, I don't think we've been in a miscommunication trope, well, with the exception of Zodiac Academy, for a very long time, as long as this.
Did you guys say the second book of Fourth Wing was miscommunication?
Yeah.
Yeah, but it didn't feel as dragged out, or it didn't feel as repetitive.
So it's interesting because I don't want to get too philosophical. This does feel more accurate to human nature.
Hmm.
When somebody is so ingrained in their ways, if you call them out on it, they're like, yeah, yeah, my bad, my bad, my bad. But they always revert back to the thing where they originally did.
That's fair.
Even if you keep calling them out on it.
That is fair. However, I read fantasy books to get away
exactly.
from like, the nonsense of human behavior. So
exactly.
Like I want my red flags, but I want them the way I want them. Is that weird?
Yeah, we have a very limited threshold for some of these.
Like he can be a killer. Red flag, but I will go there. Miscommunication trope, red flag, not going there. It's almost too real.
Like, it's too real.
You're too close to home and now you're just annoying the fuck out of me.
No, definitely. Like you want it to be fantasy for a reason. I need to escape. That was also a reason why I have an issue with this book.
But then when you do, we're going to be here to talk about this was too unbelievable because, you know, this is the duality of us. Okay. This is human nature, as Hilda said. And I like that philosophical point because it's very accurate. I know we talked about it last time and I'll say it again this time. And Hilda, I think you called it out the first time, but like the poor reading comprehension skills really kicked in this book. So I was like, yep, yep, trekking along. And then I'm like, what the hell did I read? I didn't catch any of that. I kept reading along thinking I'll just catch up on it. Nope, just further into the riddles. And I'm like, I don't understand who we're talking about. Let's just keep rolling. Not a single thing stuck around in my head. So I had a really hard time doing the notes because I was like, what actually happened? Let me go back and reread. I think
that's the part that's messing me up is that I'm not remembering anything that happened because of the way it's written.
It took me so long to finish this book that it feels like I read 3 separate books during that time period because like the beginning, the middle, and the end are like so distinctive in what happens.
Yes, that's a very good point.
To be fair, I haven't finished the book, so I felt that. And I feel like I've been reading it for 2 weeks now.
Because you have?
Yeah, actually I have.
You're right. And I think – I don't know what is it about the way this is written. Not to like hate on this because I didn't hate it. I was just – I was noticing these nuances of like what I have these very limited thresholds of acceptance are. And I guess like there's some things that I'll power through and we'll get it later the way it's explained or the way it's written. And there's some things where I'm like, I'm just not connecting with you. And it's out the old noggin.
You know what it is, I think? So we are used to getting alternate point of views from characters that belong, if that makes sense.
Okay.
And like when we get the Callan point of view and like the Callan storyline, I feel like that's being forced onto me because I don't give a shit about Callan and he annoys the shit out of me. And I think we're supposed to like him a little bit by the time we get to this point in the book.
Okay, I thought
But I don't.
I thought your like train of thought was going in a different direction and I was like, oh my God, yes. I think it's because we're so used to these authors info dumping on us where we get all of our info in chunks. So we have all this knowledge as we're reading versus this author who is kind of, you know, building up to do a grand reveal. So it feels like poor comprehension skills, but according to our listeners, it's done intentionally. So I think we're just frustrated because we're not getting the information as quickly as we normally do.
That I think you're 100% there.
Is
because
100%. I'm very annoyed. Just fucking tell me. Stop. That was my number one point in my notes. All cap.
Yeah.
Can someone just tell me what the fuck is going on? Fuck everyone and their riddle speak.
When I read that, I read fuck everyone in their Tom Riddle. And I was like, You know what? This kind of is like the diary. Like, we just have a whole bunch of like things telling us, like a diary telling us information and no explanation.
I think you nailed it on the head, but I've been struggling so hard to like understand, like, is it me? Is it the way it's written? Is it the pace in which I'm reading this book? But it's true. We're used to getting more chunks of information explained to us. And because this is coming so piecemeal, we're having a hard time backtracking and connecting all these dots and how they
and the information meet. Is also changing.
Information evolves as we learn more of the story. Yes. And history is becoming more clear. Like, the history lesson wasn't clear to begin with, and now it's getting less clear as more information is added.
Yeah. No, it's not us. We're not this stupid.
Thank God. Even if it is us just telling us. So here's my biggest point. Nuri is Florence Pugh to me. If you have seen Florence Pugh in Black Widow, she is Black Widow's sister. She's got this Russian accent, which I'm like, that is just who your character is, like accent and everything. But she's like, oh, Sorin, fire prick, you are back. Because she is, because like she, that's just who she is. Like, she is an assassin to me. And like, that is exactly who I picture, her accent and all, every time I read it. It's that character in Black Widow, which is like lovable, charming, a voice full of honey, but highly Eastern European, highly Russian sounding. Yeah. Love it. Let's throw to you guys. Let me hear what your thoughts and points are.
I didn't finish the book, so my thoughts and points are minimal.
I knew that the ending with Callan and Tava was a trap, so why didn't they fucking know it was a trap?
Yeah.
They keep getting trapped.
I
have an issue when you have these super powerful main characters who are supposed to be like the best of the best falling into traps. Like, fool me once, shame on you. Fine. Fool me twice, shame on me. I just, like, I can't.
And fool me three times? Because that's like three times already, right?
It's annoying. I do have a personal comment on Scarlet, and this is totally me projecting and stuff, but like, so it seems like towards the end she's finally communicating like an adult, but the way that she shuts down emotionally all of the time, like during her rescue, it's really getting on my nerves. And that's totally me, because like, I'm emotionally shutting down constantly lately because I have a lot of shit going on. But like, both of us cannot be lost in the depths of despair. So I need her to be the superhero, because it's not going to be me.
Again, it's hitting too close to home. I read fantasy to escape.
Exactly. It's hard for me to laugh at your depths of despair. I was just
laughing because I was like, completely. Yeah, girl, relatable.
Yep, it's seriously relatable. Like, I need to dissociate. I'm trying to dissociate. So I need you to get it together for me, girl, because like, I can't get it together for myself.
Stop feeling my feels.
Like, can the author stop writing such relatable characters? Please. I'm just trying to live my life. Glad to know their lives are just as much as a hot mess as ours are.
So that's my personal observation there. Maybe I'm not relating to Scarlet or not accepting Scarlet right now as a character because she's not what I need in this moment.
Mm-hmm. I could see that.
I want to say I can see that, but also I'm not. But then I'm also like, wait, we're same situation, same issue, because I don't like her as well.
So also, fuck Talwin. Fuck that Heffa.
Major fuck Talwin. I just wrote T-Money because I wasn't sure where you guys were here. So I just wrote like, fuck this bitch. But T-Money can go to hell.
And then this is kind of a spoiler, but it's a question. So the beautiful guy is her brother and Serafina is her mother?
Ugh.
I think that's what I got from the end.
I think that's what I got as well.
Can someone just let me know if I'm right or wrong?
I know they will. Also, I know, because everyone's been saying like, I can't wait for you guys to get through this.
And also, he has a name that is very difficult to pronounce.
Who?
The brother.
Because you've gotten to that part.
Yeah. Before. Yeah. No. I read the whole. Was oh yes, I thought that was at the end of book three, but whatever.
Was it?
I don't know.
Spoiler.
To me, that was before. And that can just be me being like,
I think it was that last chapter in between the stars. Also, I apologize for Toby and his jingle jangles.
As soon as you said it, it went quiet.
I know.
I thought it was the last chapter when she calls him.
Oh, yes. Okay, so I wasn't sure. Yes, I was getting brother vibes, but I wasn't sure if Serafina was his mother, her mother or not. I'm not sure.
I highlighted all of this stuff.
Anyway, well, yeah. While Hilda's looking this up, my final question to you guys were, if you were picking people to play these characters in a show, who are you playing? Obviously, I picked Florence Pugh as Nuri. That's the only person I've cast.
I feel like we got some more descriptors on what these characters look like in this book, but I still am having a hard time picturing them.
Ashtine can be played, even though she doesn't fit. I don't think she fits her physically, by Anya Taylor-Joy, because I feel like Anya Taylor-Joy can have like that spacey look that's like full of wisdom, but do like the spacey, like, I can speak to you in riddles.
Yes, and I'm aloof and I hear what the wind wants me to hear.
I agree with that one.
Soren to me, this may be a shocker. Maybe, probably not a shocker, actually. I did not cast a male main character as Henry Cavill. He's no Henry Cavill to me.
Oof.
But, no, I didn't like this guy as a – he wasn't doing it for me. But in the Netflix series, what was that, Shadow and Bones?
Is that the right one? Oh, Ben Barnes.
No.
Ben Barnes. Yes, that's who I could picture as Soren. Now, I think it's because I don't care for Soren. I don't feel for Soren that way. But I was picturing something like that. Someone like
I love
that.
Ben Barnes. But in my head, Soren's a blonde.
He's not.
I know he's not.
Yeah, Soren's Ben Barnes. I had to look it up. I'm like, yeah, I agree with this. To me, that is Ben Barnes.
Okay. Like older.
Yeah.
But still hot.
Mm-hmm. Like acceptable looking. I don't know if I'd call him hot. Again, Soren's on the book boyfriend list. So it's a struggle to cast.
You said he is or he's not?
I don't find him. I think he's good looking, but I'm not like, ooh, good looking. You know what I mean?
So I do have an issue with casting Scarlett because I feel like –
has silver hair.
Well, no, because I feel like if your name is Scarlett, you should have red hair.
Obviously. I thought she had red hair for the majority, I guess, the first part of this book. I think it was like the second book when they referred to her hair as silver. I'm like, she has silver hair? I glossed over that right away. Yeah, I don't know who I picture for her.
That's a good question. We're going to need to.
Yeah, so this is maybe the Spotify question of the week. Who are you casting in this series to play these characters? And I had really good ones for everyone else, and I'm like, I'm definitely going to remember this for the podcast. I don't remember a single one of them other than Florence Pugh. So we'll just have to see what I cast next time we record. Any last thoughts, my friends?
Can we make shorter books?
Yeah.
Yeah. Did you make your bookends comment?
I did.
Okay. I thought that was an excellent observation.
Thank you.
Like the beginning, like the end, hated the middle.
Hate of the middle. It's a bit tough. So let's get into main plot points that happened in this book. Now, sometimes as we do when we get multiple character POVs, as we did in this book, we do our best to follow along chronologically, but sometimes it's just easier to talk about this one person all at the same time. So you'll see that a little bit. I tried to keep it chronological, and then we just kind of get into what's happening with these people, and then we get into the ending. So you've been warned. It's not exactly in order. With that said, we start off with a flashback. Now, this flashback features the Little Whirlwind, who we now learn was Talwin. And we see Soren kind of being the guiding light and guiding figure in her life. So previously, we've heard about how she had such abandonment issues because he essentially raised her and taught her everything and was her tutor and her friend. And so this is where we got to experience a little slice of their life. So he was teaching her to blow out, I think it was birthday candles, or was teaching her to blow out a candle. And then she had to use her wind powers to be able to do it. And so you see a lot of this cuteness where he's going down to the kitchen to get some extra ice cream and they're sneaking it from Queen Elena, who's overseeing her studies. And it was just really cute to see how cute and young she was and then how sweet and close they actually were. So we kind of get a taste a little bit of the taste of the betrayal. Because at this point, I'm not seeing it as a full-on betrayal. I'm just seeing it as your man had a little bit of a dramatic problem in his life, and he had a hard time with it, and he left you alone. So maybe that is abandonment. But I didn't see it as – I didn't think it was as egregious as she made it seem up to this point.
I think we needed to definitely have this for context. And I think it's more of like they were really close and they're not anymore because she feels abandoned. But she's also like a petty bitch.
She's very petty, and we'll get into her.
I was like, she feels abandoned by everyone, but like her parents didn't abandon her. They just died.
Right.
Maybe they wouldn't abandon you if you weren't such a shitty person.
She said what she said.
No takes backs.
No take backs. So let's get into where we last left off. So remember when we last left off in the end of book two, Scarlett has just been captured by the syndicate and held hostage. She left in a very dramatic, abrupt fashion, which we all hated, where she just came up with her plan, concocted her plan, told no one, left her rings, and basically shut down her bonds to everyone, and then peaced out so no one can find her. So obviously, Soren is devastated by the fact that he cannot feel her down their twin flame bond. He is devastated that Scarlett slipped out without telling him. And the inner court is also equal parts pissed and worried because not only did she just abandon Soren, she abandoned them. And I thought this was so dramatic too. Like, she even left her wedding ring behind. Like, why? It seemed so out of characteristic. We're going to have these like lovey-dovey talks, pull me from the darkness. No, I'll pull you from the darkness. So let's live in the darkness to then be like, peace out. I'm going to be dark over this way. So just felt out of character for her to do that, but also very petty. Everyone is straight up panicking. Juliet, we remember, is the Oracle and visits them during this time, this planning. And I'm going to say planning loosely because they really were just trying to guess where the hell she could possibly be because no one has a single clue where she could be. And Juliet just pops by, as an Oracle does, and tells them two things. She will not be the same as you found her, and you need more than the people in this room to get her out. And they're like, cool. Any other clues you want to just riddle for us? Because that's not helpful at all. But of course, she will not be the same as you found her. She will not be the same after you found her. That doesn't make sense. She will not be the same as you found her? Maybe I typoed that wrong.
No, it's she won't be the same as she was before.
Thank you. I was like, that's not right. She won't be the same as she was before, essentially is what it boils down to. She will not be the same person she was before. Thank you. And obviously this weighs on Soren because he's like, well, what is happening to her? You're thinking the worst.
Yeah, so he's thinking it's going to be like some terrible physical thing is going to happen to her. Whereas if you're a normal person, you're just like, oh, she's going to have some weird character development.
Not necessarily a missing limb, but a character development. So they enlist the help of Azriel Luin, which is Talwin's second. He can also travel like Scarlett does, and the gang needs him to hatch their quick escape plan. They also need Neri, her former sister in the Wraiths of Death, and the Shifter brother and sister duo, who we hadn't met before. We only actually get Ariana, the sister part of this duo, to accompany us on this mission. And let me tell you, she was a fun character. I loved her. She was kept things interesting. She was spicy. She's a shifter, so they're really polyamorous. Is that the word I'm looking for? We're just doing it everywhere at every opportunity we can. And so she's very
sexual. She was here for a good time.
She was here for a good time.
And I was about that.
She was here for a good time. I just thought it was funny. She kept like constantly hitting on everyone. Like dragging her hand down their arm, like, oh, what are you doing later after this mission? Or we can do it now. It's up to you. Yeah. So we enlist the help of this ragtag team of Azriel, Neri, and Ariana, the shifter, to go back into the mortal lands and help rescue her. Quick aside about Neri, she has been keeping the children hidden so the Black Syndicate can't find them. So she has been having her hands full while Cassius has been working tirelessly to amplify the wards to make sure that the Black Syndicate can't find them. So those two have been busy. So again, we meet the shifter Ariana. She is the beta to Stellan, the brother. We learn one of her special skills is not only can she shift herself into animals, but she can shift into materials, or she can shift and manipulate materials, which is going to be very helpful later when you're trying to plan an escape and need to get someone out of some shackles. So eventually they zero in that Scarlet is being held in the Black Syndicate and plan their rescue mission. Now what is happening to Scarlet? Scarlet is chained up and the Assassin Lord is playing up his psychological bullshit torture and mind games. She's now realizing the full consequence of her blood bond that she, her blood magic that she did, and that she's blocked all of her bonds to everyone. So not just her twin flame bond, which she thought she was doing to protect Soren for all the right reasons, but also her guardian bond. So the person who's also able to find her and their life is tied to her essentially. We learn a few things from our visit here with Ulrich, the Assassin Lord. Number one, still an asshole. Number two, he goes on a big info dump of information, which I found very helpful per our previous gripes. He says that she inherited her mother's gifts of shadow and night, and why she was also gifted Elena's magic of fire and ice. Elena was not her mother. Bomb drop. Because the first two books, we're operating an assumption that Queen Elena is her mom. Her mother also bonded her to her guardian, which she has through a flashback dream memory, remembers this process happening and that she knows it's Cassius. During this dream moment in the memories, she remembers meeting a woman with silver hair who mixed their blood for the blood magic. So I'm like, silver hair, you say? That's suspicious. We also learn that only two bloodlines can practice blood magic. The Avalanians and the Morans. Again, suspicious. I'm doing those little like suspicious tappy fingers here. So from this, we gather that Scarlet is at least part Avalanian, if not full-blooded. Now here's what we learn about Ulrich. Not only is he helping the Moran lords, which we already had our suspicions of, but he is prime Moran lord numero uno. He is a Moran Lord Prince, and he's teaming up with all the Moran Lords to bring her, to help her break the keys, because he wants her to break the wards around Avonlea so they can go get whatever is hiding behind those gates. Again, mystery. We don't know what's behind there. And he wants Scarlet to take a blood bond to protect the others, but also indenture her to fulfilling his request to break the blood bonds. And through this information dump, we also learn about their plans to kill the Contessa, which is the ruler of the Night Children, in case you're wondering. So a lot of information we got out of our gold friend, the Assassin Lord. Mikhail, who is a giant creep, still sleeps with her, but not like sleeps with her. He just cuddles up with her. And she is so starved for food and warmth during this time that it's part of like the psychological torture where she has to rely on Mikhail, the person she hates the most, for warmth. And they only barely just feed her, because if they let her starve herself to death, her magic she was using to create the blood magic will fully deplete, and then Soren will be able to find her through the bond. So they're like just feeding her enough to keep her alive and her magic sated, but not enough to actually provide her nourishment and strength. So this rescue mission, the team gathers and they concoct a plan that involves Cassius and Ariana. Cassius will go through the Black Syndicate wards, because we know he's got witch blood in him. It's going to trigger the wards, but it won't be suspicious because he's been doing this all his entire life. They'll know it's Cassius. Ariana will be hidden on him as a mouse. And I was like, oh, I like this. This is a good plan. So Ariana turns into a mouse and scouts the Black Syndicate to find Scarlet. Cassius, like their plan was like, Cassius is just going to stroll in like totally normal. Everything's fine. And in my head, I'm like, why would this be fine? The Assassin Lord knows you're working with Scarlet. He knows you guys are all in cahoots. So this is kind of like walking into a trap, Cassius. And lo and behold, it was. It's because once he came in, did he come back out? No, he did not. He was trapped there.
This is how I'm like, you guys are the rulers of your kingdoms. You guys are really dumb. Really, like, really dumb.
Smart sometimes. But then I'm also like, this is a silly mistake we made here, people. This is like an easy one. Like, we didn't carry the one in our math problem. Like, anyone could have figured that one out.
That's funny.
Yes. So Cassius is used to manipulate and try to trick Scarlet into taking the blood bond, and he is really pretty much tortured within an inch of his life and is not long for this earth when the gang get to him. So Ariana tells them where Scarlet is and uses her shifter magic to create a key. Soren, of course, goes in to find her. They end up fighting their way in and out and manage to take a barely conscious Cassius back with them and travel all the children back to the fire court. So not only did they make this grand escape, but they got Cassius, they got Scarlet, and all the kids safely away. So pretty much a win coming off that terrible loss that they just had. So now we're back to what I'm deeming the middle part of this book, where there's a lot of information that happens. So this is where we'll kind of jump around from our different character POVs. So when we talk about what's happening with the inner circle, and I'm lumping Cassius into there. So when we get back, he is in really, really rough shape, and essentially everyone is preparing for his death. Scarlet knows that Hazel, the High Witch, is his mom, and that if we can get her to come to the fire court to heal him, he might just hang on and he might have a chance. We learn that he needs blood to help him heal. And we also learn that Scarlet, because she's in such bad shape herself, keeps pulling from him as his guardian. So as his guardian bond, when Scarlet's magic depletes, basically Cassius becomes like her charger pack to charge her magic back up. So as her battery depletes, she starts pulling from him, she charges back up. But since he is pretty much knocking on death's door, like, it's not helping him. So they essentially have to wait for her to fully deplete and then nurse her back to life. So this part reminded me a lot of when like vampires have to drain someone fully and then that turns them into another vampire. So it's kind of that same similar vibe. So in order that process happens, in order for them to come back, Scarlet has to drink blood from Soren and Cassius has to drink his blood from Cyrus. There we go. Yes. So later we're going to learn through kind of these in and out dreams where she's healing or where Scarlet is healing that the Lord of Darkness tells her that she needs a source. And we'll get to what that is in a minute, because you would think it'd be easier just like, tell me a little bit more about this. No, you need a source. Okay, bye. So Cassius, during this journey, hooray, gets to meet his mom. But the reunion is super tense. Obviously, he's working through some abandonment issues and why his mom gave him up. So it's really not a warm and fuzzy reunion, but you can tell his mom really cares about his well-being. His father, she's pretty tight-lipped about and won't, but also can't give any more details about it. But he sends a spirit animal, which is a dragon, which now tells us that daddy's pretty well connected. So excited to see more on that. And that was a spirit animal. I forgot what the spirit animal's name, but it's in the pronunciation guide in the beginning.
It's Ranveer?
Yes. Ranveer?
Or is that the name of the dad? I think it's the name of the dragon is Ranveer. But also, does this mean the dad is a god?
I don't know.
So I think they're gods. I think I said this in the last recording as well. But
I mean, it makes sense if Hazel is such a man hater that she would hook up with a god and not with like a male.
She's but also like the sorceress, He-Man Woman Haters Club, but like in reverse.
The sorceress was like made the bargain with Soren, and his end of the bargain was to bring her someone with like god blood. Mm-hmm. And he was like, well, I'll never be able to do that because that doesn't exist, or we haven't seen one in centuries. And I'm like, you're an idiot, but here we go again.
Yep. So there's something. Cassian's got a powerful daddy. Powerful mommy also. Like, he's in a very, not a Nepo baby, but he's doing real well for himself.
Like, I keep reading witch mommy. I'm like, I kind of like that term. I want to be a witch mommy.
Yeah.
I want to have a witch mommy.
Who's your witch mommy?
No, I said I would want to have a witch mommy.
Oh, I was like, well, who? Is it Manon in real life?
Aw, Manon.
Manon, yes. All right, back to this book. Quick aside. So, hooray. Now Scarlet is back from the brink of death and Cassie's recovering. But the inner court and Soren are pissed. And she gathers her strength. They go into a meeting and they let her have it for leaving her in the dark and not trusting them. And honestly, she deserved every word. Like, she did. She deserved every word that they said that was mean and hurtful. And I said what I said. But I feel like you also agree with me.
But was it mean? Was it mean, or is it just truthful? Like, truth hurts.
A truth hurts, but sometimes, you know, it can be in your delivery.
Yeah, no, I don't think.
Yeah, I also think mean her delivery was also dropping her wedding ring after saying, correct, "I think what she did was hurtful." And
it was hurtful
when Cyrus let her have it. I was like, "Wow, this was good," and she took it.
She did.
And she took it too. She was like, I fucked up.
I liked that when they let her have it, it wasn't like a two sentence thing. And she was like, you're right. I was wrong. They're like, I forgive you. Like, they really went on what a normal conversation tangent would be. Like, they really channeled the fuel and the rage of being so angry and just kind of taking all their emotions and pushing it back onto this person and be like, this is what I felt during this time when you did this to me. And even Eliza, her like best friend at one point, also let her have it. And it was just, not to say like I enjoyed her getting bashed, but it was good. Mm-hmm. It was a good portion.
I felt like the entire time I was reading this little part, I kept hearing Fergie's like Big Girls Don't Cry in the background as like the theme music, because like she was crying.
We'll have to add it to the playlist. See if it's on there. Yes. So they all let her have it. And I'd say this next big section of this book is all about building back trust. So trust with the inner court, with Eliza and Peggy. I'm saying, like, every time I read Eliza and Peggy from Hamilton, but there's no Peggy in this book. So that's confusing. Just Eliza. Eliza and Cyrus and Briar and Ashton, the whole inner court that kind of came to her side without any questions. But most especially, trust with Soren. Another good chunk of this middle section is the hunt for the source. And so we learn through this dream sequence that there is a source that she needs that is better than drinking blood from Soren every time she needs to fuel up, power up. Lots of researching, lots of ancient language decoding and asking around. And we finally found out that a source is basically a buddy that gives you a bloody high five for your powers to fuel up. And
I'm sorry, that's such a great description. Because it is. Like, I'm going to cut my hand, you cut your hand, let our bloods unite.
Also, they cut their hands all the time. Like, a palm cut hurts. This doesn't heal up right away.
To be fair, heal for them.
To be fair.
To be fair, that's true. To be fair and to be fair. They're like, it's sewn back up. This would take me like days and I'd probably be like, eh, not again.
I'm still recovering from a paper cut.
Yeah. It's interesting to have healing powers. That's true. I'm like, just walk around bloody hands cut open the entire time. Like, can we just find another part that would not bleed and be so painful? Like your forearm? Anywho, but yes, to oversimplify, it's a bloody high five. There is a ritual. You get another mark and they become your lifelong source. And who takes this serious undertaking? Who else? Who else could it possibly be, Scarlet? Of course, it's going to be Soren. There was far too much back and forth on this for someone who is your twin flame. Of course, he's the most logical person. Why are we second guessing this? Because even when he's like, I'll be your source, she's like, don't be my source. They can't ask this of you. And he's like, I'm your twin flame. You have to trust me. And so there's this whole back and forth. I'm like, who else is it going to be? Alric? No.
Also, pretty sure his name is Alaric.
I call him Alaric. Okay. Is it Alaric?
Alaric, yeah. Alaric. I don't remember if we went through this in this
we
book.
We did. With series. Another book.
Or was it a different series that had?
No, it was a different series. It was the Hurricane Wars. Yeah, I mean, at least I'm consistent here.
That one we were like, is it Alaric or Alaric?
Alaric?
I think it's Alaric, though.
Okay. It's Alaric. Okay. So is it Alaric? It's
Eric with an A.
And an L.
I was Eric going through my head. I was like, Eric with an A? Arik?
Yeah. Look, she gives the pronunciation guides, and apparently I strayed way too far on that one. Did my own brain one. So yes, of course, it's going to be Soren, and it really went back and forth too much that was a little annoying to me, so that's why I had to put it there. We also come to figure out that she is, in fact, not a half-blooded Avalayan, but a full-blooded Avalayan, and she needs someone who can help her permanently top off her magic, which is why the source is needed. Again, up until this point, they were like, this whole little spiel about I'm going to drain, like he leaves her like a wine glass of blood and then she's got to drink it. And there's like, there's a lot of glasses involved. Like just go straight to the source. Like, you know, I don't know. It just felt a little prim and proper for me. I think it's because we're reading too many vampire.
No, I can't. So first of all, I love vampires. So it bothered me that she was like, no, I don't want to drink. Second of all, I cannot for the life of me now remember why she was so icked out by this. But I didn't think it was a good enough reason to be icked out by it.
No. Like the good outweighs the cost. Like it's you're not killing this person to get it. He's giving over it willingly. He's even going to put it in a nice cup for you. Like just
– I'm sorry. She has an ick over this. Like the girl kills people for a living.
Yeah. No qualms splitting open a belly and letting your guts hang out. But blood that I have to eat? No, sir. It can be thrown on my face as I slice your head off. That's totally cool. But again, a chalice of your warm blood, not for me. It's a hard no. Cassius, on the other hand, no problems about it. He's like, yep, I'll take the blood cup. Thank you very much. So there's that. Now, of course, I think this happened a little bit later, but when you remember they have their twin flame marks and they have their little trials they have to do back and forth to get their, like, their full hand tattoo and to be anointed. So in doing so and becoming his source, Soren fulfills his sacrifice trial and they are one step closer to being anointed as twin flames. Hurrah! Now, another portion we come to realize here through some royal meetings and some good old-fashioned thinking about it, Scarlet realizes that the amulets that up until this point some characters have just been casually mentioned to be wearing or playing with are actually the very important, all-important, in fact, keys that Juliet, the Oracle, says Scarlet needed to find. Tula had one. Little Tula had one she had found. Teyva had one. They just all happened to be having these amulets that people around Scarlet had. So, and they figured it out because of the way it was lighting. And they brought it to Ashton. And she figured it out. And it's this whole thing. Either way, they figured it out. We know what the keys are. We know they're amulets. We know that there's a couple missing. And we have to go find those suckers. Now let's talk about Talwin. Talwin.
That bitch.
She's turned into, and I think the book summary put this very nicely. She was expecting an ally, and I kind of expected her to become an ally in this. Like, we're all in this together. And she quickly kind of becomes this bratty queen. She's upset that she's not immediately briefed on everything upon their return from this great rescue. Scarlet challenges her a lot during royal meetings, and she doesn't give her the respect. But also, like, she's a fellow queen, so she doesn't have to answer to you. And it's pretty clear that they're becoming some – there's a royal divide. It'll – not to jump to another series, but it reminded me a lot of Queen Melina in the Guild series. Played a prisoner. A lot of Queen Melina was coming through in this. She's very entitled and very focused on what is owed to her, which is a revenge against the Avalanians for all her abandonment. Of course, Scarlet ends up telling her that Taric, her once twin flame, lives. And of course, it's even met with disbelief from Soren. Like, surely you heard wrong. Surely that's not the person that captured you and tortured you in the Black Syndicate when you were held there. And she's like, no, dog, that's who it was. And so this is not met over with the – didn't really go over well with her because obviously she had mourned this person's loss. She – another person that abandoned her now, she's learning that he does in fact live. So it's forcing her to kind of relive all of that. She's got a lot of rage. We learn that she's very, very close to – the Earth Court Prince, which is Azriel Lewin. And they, you can tell they have something happening, something's going on between them. And obviously they have like this distraction, sexual tension. We're like, I'll distract you. You distract me. And those were spicy scenes we've read. But there's some loyalty there that he has. So she's not completely in the dark, but her people she can count on her hands are quickly dwindling as Scarlet has entered the chat. Ashton, her longtime friend since they were little, she is a Windwalker. And during this kind of loyalty divide that starts to happen, she pledges her loyalty to Talwin. And in doing so, loses her access to the winds Remember, she's the queen spoken riddle, the queen of the spoken riddle. So like the winds whisper something in her ear, she listens, and then she'll tell you the riddles that were said to her. And it's infuriating to talk to her. Briar is the only one who can actually make sense of her craziness. And it's actually, you know, the wind talking is a major part of her personality. So in choosing Talwyn, the winds decided you chose the wrong side, and they limit her access to these powers. So this is a devastating blow to her during this time. She chose it even though at great cost to herself, because she didn't want Talwyn to feel alone, that someone chose her, which is a very noble friend. Fun fact, Ashton is also Bay and Briar. Love that for them. There's like this weird little relationship with them, and I love them. All right. So let's get to the tail end of what happened here. Now, the group, of course, has to decide what are we going to do? Because we've got the Meloran lords. There's clearly going to be a threat. And we need to host a summit, get all the rulers together, and discuss what we're going to do with this threat to our lands. They become increasingly worried that the Contessa, the ruler of the Night Children, has not responded. So they decide to pay her a visit. Now, I love this because we get Juliet, Neri, and Scarlet during this mission. And it was so fun to see all three of them being the Wraiths of Death, seeing how they laid out a plan ahead of time and kind of putting all the plans in motion. So when they got there, it seemed like this happenstance of events.
But they planned it all.
Yes. Thank you. Happenstance series of events, but they had planned it all.
Also, the conversations during this part, they were actually kind of funny.
They were funny and they were cute and sistery, and it was so cool. I loved seeing them all three together again. Now, of course, they had a very simple plan. We're going to go into the Night Court Kingdom. We're going to go find the Contessa, and we're going to tell her what's up. Was it that simple? No, never is. So the Contessa had been missing for months and months at this point. They eventually meet up with her second, who finally reveals he has no idea where she is. Scarlet decides to practice some blood magic with the Contessa's second to try and locate her. So they do. They end up traveling to the river estate, which has a series of tunnels underneath that she can get hidden in and out. And they're like, okay, well, she's probably there. Let's go look. And as they initially walk into the river house, the river estate, they basically walk into a trap laid by Lord Tyndale. So, of course, the Contessa is there tied up. Looks like she's been there for months because she's been missing for months. And Lord Tyndale has been waiting for them. So the group that is outside, because we had the three Wraiths of Death inside, the group outside is attacked with men with wings that we later learn are seraphs. Also, Tyndale does that annoying trick where he slips into your mind and pretends to be someone else. And so this part section was like a good little battle. Like, I would watch this happily and play out on like a HBO Max TV show because I think it was very well done. Good high stakes. So there's a very good battle. Scarlet conjures a shadow dragon, I think, for the first time here, which is pretty badass, and rides it. So they're attacked by men. They all make it out, thankfully. Neri escapes with the Contessa, and the gang all head back to regroup. Now, they know they need to go visit the sorceress in the underwater prison in the water court, because they need to get some answers. And I think she's the only one that can do it, because after Lord Tyndale said some mysterious things about, oh yeah, you guys call her the sorceress here, and points them in that direction. Now we go to meet the sorceress. Guess what? More riddles. And I had to go back to read to make sure I was processing this correctly, and I probably didn't get it right, but this basically is what summed it up. She says, beginnings, endings, light and dark, fire and shadows. Out of the chaos comes the firsts, who travel to their own worlds to set up kingdoms. They created the lessers. And he was one of the first. Some were loyal to the beginning, some to the ending. Beginning wanted more, but she didn't, and bound herself to another, and created with another, keeping her true heritage a secret. He gathered his forces loyal to him, and so the balance tipped. And now you're thinking, Caitlin, you left out all like the proper pronouns there. Who's the he? Who's the she? What's happening? Where are they? Nope.
No.
That's just what it was. That's how it was explained to us.
No fucking idea what's going on.
I was like, I didn't catch that, but I did read a portion of that in the next book. So I'm like, I'm going to call it out here because this feels like this is probably more important. So whatever the fuck that meant. The sorceress was going to trade Scarlet. They eventually found out that she had the amulet, and the sorceress really wanted the Book of Blood Marks that Scarlet had been studying. So also she wanted this book because it was her book. She made it. And she's like, you have my book. Very much like a Winifred calling to the book, like, my book.
Book.
Yes. Really wanted it.
Book we have thou.
So she, Scarlet, being ever so clever, tricks the sorceress and uses blood magic against her to reveal the amulet's location and safely keep the book to herself. Now, in this tirade of random things that we learned, she said in the threat before they left that this is the name I wanted to look up. Achez? Achez? How are we saying this man's name? It sounds like Achu, like you should say bless you afterward. So we're going to go with Achez. A-C-H-E-Z. But we learned that Achez sent his deadliest seraphs to hunt her down. And that's, you know, not a great omen. So while this whole thing is happening, Teyva and Callan have been back with the children at the Fire Court taking care of them. Callan is itching to go back and is telling his father, I'm like on a sabbatical, I'm visiting new lands, I'm gaining exposure, when really he's just been holed up with them and couldn't find a way to get back to them. So he really needs to go back to his court, and he knows he needs to go there without raising suspicion from the Moran lords, who are kind of his father's right-hand man in his council. And we also know that he'll be walking into an arranged marriage to Veda, because they were really laying that on thick before. She really wants to be his wifey and the queen. So barf, we hate that bitch. So Teyva. Now Teyva is Lord Tyndall's daughter. Biological, we're not sure at this point because he's a Moran lord and she seems not very much a Moran lord. Teyva comes up with a plan to arrange a fake marriage. She's like, if we go back and you're with me now and we announce that we're getting married, you and I can work as spies to get information back to Scarlet. And he realizes that, yes, that is actually a very good plan, Teyva. But he realizes two things. That is a very good plan, Teyva. A very good plan, Teyva. I don't know why I can say this. That's a very good plan, Teyva. But also, she is much smarter than everyone gives her credit for. Because why she comes across as a demure wallflower, just kind of listening, a proper lady, she's taking in and studying and reading this room and knows how to play every single one of them by their tells and weaknesses. So she is like, Callan, I've got this. We'll be the eyes and ears, and we'll report back to keep Scarlet and the gang and the children safe. So they go back and they outsmart the Moran lords in Callan's father's court for now, because Mikael and Veda are pissed that, and it's really, and all the lords are, they're pissed that they played this off. The king, of course, is like, my son's back and he's engaged. What more could I ask for? Hooray. And immediately plans this wedding. And it's only a matter of time before they strike back. As the eyes and ears for Scarlet, she comes to them, gives them the update on the amulets. Here's what we have. Here's what we've learned. I believe that the last one is held in Lord Lairwood's Manor. Can you guys get in there and go scope this out for me? So they say, sure. Wei orchestrated a plan that got Lord Lairwood's estate empty. So he would be sent away with Mikael and Veda would be sent away. And I don't even know where the fuck they were supposed to send her away. But like, she was called away on ladyship business. So basically, the estate would be empty and they could break in and properly search the house. So in they go with Callan's guards, Finn and
Sloane.
I was gonna call him Sawyer, but that's not right. Finn and Sloane. So in they go. As they're searching the Lairwood estate, they come across the room that Scarlet had been held in, and as they got there, Veda shows up and she has got Teyva already at knife point. Things are not looking good. Callan takes his vital out of his pocket, smashes it on the ground, and hopes and prays that Scarlet can get there in time. Now back on her side, Scarlet is about to get into actually some sexy texty time, which is like, shit, I gotta go. Because months ago, she had the High Witch brew this potion she gave to Callan, said, when you need me, throw this potion on the ground. And I pictured like you'd throw it and like a poof of smoke would come out, you know, like a magician. So throw us in the ground, I'll be there. And so there she went. She went with Soren, and we learned a couple things. Veda was in fact a seraph. She had golden wings and basically confirmed a couple truths, that they served the assassin lord and really kind of, that was kind of it. She's like, I'm going to get you. And, you know, you're unstoppable. Your fate's inevitable. All that kind of bullshit talk without actually telling us any information. But let me tell you, the death that's Scarlet gives her, very satisfying. She like climbs on her shadow dragon. She cuts off her wings and she burns her. Like Veda is no more for this earth. And it's very satisfying because we know it's going to upset her brother, Kale, even more. So that was great. Love this for us. Why we're here, let's get out of here because obviously we just killed her brother and sister. Someone arrives. Who arrives to get them out? Oh, Taric. Taric shows up with someone in wolf form. Who is this wolf form? Oh, we learn it's Talwin. Yes, she can also shift into wolf form, and for a while in her moodiness, she's been living with wolves. I forgot to tell you that, but she was doing that. So we learn that Talwin has now betrayed their kingdoms, basically, and aligned herself with Taric, her once alleged. I'm saying alleged because I don't think it was true. Her once true twin flame love, Taric, who serves the Moran lords. And he drags them all to the downstairs of the Lairwood estate, Alaric, essentially.
Alaric, whatever, however we're saying his name. And Lord Tyndall also show up.
Yeah, that's what I was getting. So he drags him back downstairs, and that's where we're met with the assassin lord, Alaric? I forgot how we're saying this now.
Alaric.
The assassin lord is there with the king and queen, Callan's parents, and their younger sister. They're all handcuffed and tied up. Now, Sloane and Finn, being the ever good guards that they are, immediately run to go try to rescue the king and the queen and the princess. And all of a sudden, they just drop. Like, just drop to the ground. And we learn that the assassin lord has the power to just stop their hearts, just to squeeze their hearts, and they are no more. Which, this one hurt. This one hurt a little bit. So Sloane and Finn are the first ones to go during this scene. Things are not looking good for our group at this point. They know that they are outnumbered, and right before they were taken down, Soren sends a note to... Oh, God, what's his name? Rainer.
He uses Rainer to go get Eliza and Briar and
right, because it's like we're in some shit. We need people here. Bring Asriel because he's the only one who can travel. He's the only one who can travel at this point and is probably our only hope of getting out of here alive because Scarlet's going to have to use all her powers up and I'm also tapped out, especially after this big battle with Veda. So Scarlet drops the news that I killed Veda and she's like, and I don't miss her one bit. Mikhail's pissed. The assassin lord's like, well, that's a pity. That's a shame. Like, no remorse, which I just found a little bit comical, actually. And so trying to coerce, because really the assassin lord's ultimate goal is to get Scarlet to hand over the keys and help him break the wards. So he's using the king and the queen and the princess against her. And so he kills the king and the queen, slashes their throats open, and tries to go after Callan's little sister, Eva. Now, Scarlet throws up a shield around Eva and is able to ward off the assassin lord for only a little bit of time. She's kind of exerting all of her powers here. And of course, he's doing like a monologue on why we're trying to do this. And if only you would have listened and you were the weapon that I'm trying to hone and all this cleverness. And he says, well, you know who else was very clever? And who sided herself to me already. It's the new Contessa. Now Scarlet's like, I'm so sorry, the new Contessa? Because we rescued her. So who's the new Contessa? In slinks Nuri. Nuri has taken a blood bond to the assassin lord and is now on his side. And she killed the Contessa that they rescued. And since that rescue, she's been aiding the Contessa back to health, but really she killed her and took over, is now new ruling all the Night Children. And this betrayal, this
one hurt.
Bridget's eyes went whoop, big eyes. So Neri starts to explain herself a little bit to Scarlet, who was just absolutely wrecked from this. And she says, well, you were taking too long. Like, I had the children. I couldn't keep putting up the wards. I had to negotiate for their safety. Like, I had to do what I had to do to protect them. I always told you I'd protect those children. And so why Scarlet understands a little bit why she did what she did, she feels immense guilt that She didn't get back there fast enough. Now all of this is her fault. And of course, the assassin lord's like playing it up in her brain again. Like, look, all of their deaths, all their fault. You made Neri do this thing. And now we're against each other. And as things are starting to get really bad, her shields are depleting. The assassin lord's about to Eva. Avengers assemble. That's when all the reinforcements arrive through the fire portal. We've got Cassius, we've got Azrael, and Ashton and Briar. So all of the ruling courts of the Fae world are there. Now, this is where the battle gets real crazy. So everyone starts fighting off and going crazy with each other. Cassius is now fulfilling and fueling up Scarlet with the Guardian Bond. She, of course, in Scarlet fashion, starts to realize there's no way we're all getting out of here alive, and I'm just going to go basically balls to the walls, use up all my power, and try to save everyone as much as I can. So as she's kind of going through this mental draining process, she starts telling Soren down the bond, I'll always love you. I'm glad for the time we had. And he's like, what are you doing? Freaking out. Because they've kind of been on two opposite sides of the room. So as the battle and chaos is happening, he's trying to cut his way to get to her because he's like, are you crazy? You're going to leave me again? As he's doing this, Talwin sees this from across the room. And she decides, you're not getting to her. And I'm going to stop you from getting to her by shooting out a bolt of lightning directly to his chest.
Oh, I hate her.
Stopping his heart and making him collapse to the ground on sight. Scarlet goes nuts because now she can feel her twin flame bond breaking. As we heard from Cyrus before, you'll know when your twin flame dies because you'll feel it in every ounce of her soul. So she is absolutely breaking, screaming, crying. And through the chaos of the battle, Azrael does in fact end up portaling them all away to regroup. But before that, that's true. What they end up doing before they have the time to reportal and regroup and get everyone away, all their spirit animals show up to defend them and give them the time they need to head back and bring their bodies with them. So this brings us to naturally Alaric is pissed. He knows now what he...
But he has the keys.
Right. He's got the keys. Does he have the keys? No, he doesn't have the keys yet.
No, he does have the keys because Scarlet took them with her because she didn't trust anybody else to have them. And she handed them over to Tarik during these discussions. So he has six of the seven keys.
That's right. He has six keys. He didn't have the last one. So she handed over the keys to Avalon with them.
Azrael comes back and has that tough talk with Talwin.
Why did she get the keys over to Tarik?
Because she was negotiating, I think, for Tava's life.
Oh.
No, for Eva's life, sorry.
Hold on, Hilda. I think I messed this up. I'm trying to read. So she gave him the keys and they used them immediately to...
She gave him the keys.
The next one, right?
Well, no. So then, essentially, post-chaos battle, the inner court is trying, or inner circle is trying to make sure that she doesn't have a meltdown. And we get the scene where Ashtine tells Briar, like, I need to stay behind because I'm pledging myself to what's her face, to Talwin, but not necessarily my court. And then Azrael talks to Talwin and he's basically like, I'm in love with you, but what you're doing is wrong. And like, I can't stand by you while you do this. And he abandons her and he runs off with the other people. So then we get the scene where, like, 3 weeks later, Scarlet is back in the assassin lord's office.
Yes, where she meets him and hands over the keys.
She hands over the last key and she basically is like, no, she doesn't hand over the last key. She's basically like, you've declared war on me. I'm going to destroy everything. In the scene, it calls out specifically that she doesn't have any marks on her hands.
Mm-hmm.
So he's dead, like for real dead?
He's dead. For all intents and purposes, he's dead. And she was like, she gave him something. I forget what it was.
She gave him final key, or she gave him the final key, and she
she didn't.
Colwyn had shifted them already yet, and he said, "Yes, it took way longer than I thought it would, but she had already shifted them."
So, but she basically she destroys the syndicate with her fire, with her white fire, her star fire.
Right. So as she drops this off, she destroys and like has killed her way into the syndicate. Drops this off with him and is like, here's the final key. And even he's shocked by how collected she is during this whole interaction. And like collected, but not really, because she is killed her entire way in, everyone in the Black Syndicate. And then as she's on her way out, burns it to the fucking ground with her white flames. So really not that collected. We also learned that Daemus was in fact his father, but we are not sure that
Esmeray is not his mother.
Correct. Esmeray is not his mother.
In this scene, though, ultimately, it plays out the way that Scarlett intended it to play out, because she figured that he would immediately use the keys because Talwin figured out how to shift them. And so he uses the keys, but instead of the keys opening things, because I guess the sorceress gave some like type of puzzle that sometimes keys and locks don't go together. Sometimes they open multiple doors. Sometimes they don't open anything. He uses the keys incorrectly, and that ends up closing all of the rifts where the seraphs and his like army aides were coming. And so basically he miscalculated what she's doing. And so basically she's like on a mission to burn the world down.
Right. And in doing so, not only did she close the rifts, but she also lowered the wards. So now the shifters can come in and out. There's nothing blocking them anymore. The Witch Queen comes over and is like, I've got a message from Scarlet Adesia to you. And they're like, how the hell are you here? Like, the wards are gone too. And then tells her like, I've got spies on the inside and I'm already here and I'm coming for you, which I thought was a really fun, like, your days are limited.
Yeah. So Scarlet's on a rampage, and then we get the final chapter.
So the final chapter is, of course, The Void Between the Stars. So in this chapter, we get the Sorin is looking for her. He's slowly realizing, he's hearing her screaming. He's processing the words of no goodbyes. You are mine. I promise to you. And in doing so, he ends up running into, as one does in The Veil Between the Shadows, the Lord of Night. And he's like, you can't be here. And Sorin's like, who are you? And so there's this conversation. He's like, she's coming for you. You need to be there to get her call. And he's like, who's coming for you? What ends up happening is that another female appears with silver hair flowing past her navel and a crown of white flames bright as the starlight set on her head. And she is the Seraphina, goddess of dreams and stars. And the Lord of Night bows his head and was, I was sent by her. And Seraphina says, my daughter should not be interfering with this. And the Lord of Night says, we have little choice. It is to interfere or choose death. And so they ultimately say, as part of the source mark, it can give power, but can also call power back. And so we learn that ultimately Sorin has to heed her call. Like, she's going to call for you and you need to be ready to go back. Don't cross over yet. There's more you need to do on this world.
Like, he's in the Veil, but he just got there, so it's possible for him to go back.
Right. So Seraphina kind of gives this veiled instructions to Lord of Night what he needs to do, and then goes to say, go home, son of fire. Anala will find it interesting that someone has chosen a full-blooded. It's just, basically, she just goes, says, go home, son of fire. We've got this figured out. And to tell your sister that the mark works both ways. She said, back to the Lord of Night, which is now confirmed that that is her brother. Right. So the source mark can, I think we already said this, bring her back. So that's where it ends, with this conclusion that Lord of Night is, in fact, her brother. Sorin has died, but is not fully dead yet. And there is an opportunity for him to come back. And that's where we end book three.
We still don't have who's your daddy or really who's your mommy figured out when it comes to Scarlet.
No. I have like this burning question, and it really doesn't even pertain to our two main characters, but I just need to know. Okay, so the Marin lords, can't have offspring unless they go to some specific place.
Right.
We don't know where that place is, but we're under the impression that Mikhail and his sister were born in there.
Or the other place. They came, yes.
So they came from the other place. So is their dad really a lord?
So in the fight with Veda, she mentions, they're like, well, our dad's not, you know, we're not, that's not really our dad. And she's like, well, you're not at least full mortals anyway. So it's alluded to that they're not full mortals, but everyone else is like, well, he can't possibly be your actual children, although he does have a remarkable fondness for you. So
Lairwood, Mikhail and Veda Lairwood, I listened to this part, but I think, and remember, that's different from Lord Tyndall, which is Balaam, who's working with Alaric. They go through like all of their powers and like their specialties. And one of the things that Balaam can do is make realities different. So Mikhail's father, Lord Lairwood, was actually not his father, but they got into his head to make it seem like Mikhail and Veda were his children.
Okay.
But they never were, because I actually think they ended up killing Lord Lairwood
in one of these. Kept trying to figure out, I was like, why is Mikhail's dad not involved with
Alaric?
Oh, I thought you were talking about Teyva and Drake.
No, sorry.
No. Yeah.
Oh, I went
and
down
so Teyva then Drake. He got killed because now I think Mikhail, well, no, I think that's going into book four. And then the other thing is, though, I think Mikhail and Veda, if Veda was a seraph, I think that would mean Mikhail's a seraph.
Right. We learn he's not a full lord, but a very powerful, like, commander of the seraphs, basically.
Yeah.
So is Callan king now?
Callan technically should be king, yes. But he fled with his sister when everybody else left.
Without Teyva.
No,
with Teyva. So Teyva, Drake.
Tava, Teyva, Tava.
I call her Tava.
Is it Tava? I said Teyva.
I call her Tava. Tava, Drake, Eva, Callan, they all left with the Fae.
Okay.
Yep.
Can we add that song from Lion King that's like, I just can't wait to be king to the playlist?
Callan felt really bad about his parents dying.
Well, he should. He was being a whiny little baby the entire time.
Yeah, but I actually did feel bad for him because he witnessed his parents get their throat slit.
I think he wanted that before then. So then you can add it to the playlist up until that point.
No, he didn't want to rule.
No, he never did.
Well, he wanted to come, like, he was more accepting of, like, okay, I'm going to do this now, whereas before he didn't really want to.
But I don't, okay, ratings.
Ratings. I struggled. I say a 3.25 because it wasn't quite a 3.5. It wasn't quite a 3 because the middle part did end like it was a little bit of a bluff for me. But the beginning and the end were so good. So you know what? Maybe I'll just round it up and say it is a 3.5.
I gave it a 3.5.
That was my long-winded explanation for.
I gave it a DNF. Like, I did not finish this book.
I think it was just the middle part. You got stuck in the middle.
Did you not?
I did get stuck in the middle part.
Did you not finish, though, because you ran out of time?
You did travel.
I don't know. I was just, like, really struggling to get through the middle part.
The middle was really, really tough.
So by the time I got to a part where I was like, okay, we're hitting a groove here, I was like, yeah, the recording is in an hour.
I think you mistimed your procrastination.
No, because even we had this was a reschedule, and even then I was like, I've accepted my fate. I'm not going to finish this book, but I can't wait to find out from Caitlin, you know, retelling it for me.
Yes. So that was the big drop. It was worth the dramatic eyes and like that I said when Soren died. So that part was super good. That's how the book ends. I am like almost halfway through the next book due to a stomach bug that kept me up with my daughter all night. So, you know, pluses and minuses there. But can't wait to see how this – we get into it and see how the series ends when we cover Lady – what is this one?
Of Embers.
Lady of Embers. I was like, Lady in Red. Lady of Embers next. So let's get into episode shout-outs. And
let's wrap this up.
Yeah, wrap this baby up. So the books we're calling out in our list of shout-outs and questions, our Spotify questions of the week, are Fire in the Flesh from JLA, Gold, the Plated Prisoner series, House of Earth and Blood from SJM, and then Iron Flame. So if you haven't read any of those books, I haven't read the questions yet, so this is my generic spoiler warning. I don't know what it's talking about, what we're talking about, but please know you've been warned. As a reminder, Spotify questions of the week are up for every single episode, so you can go back from this episode and more to drop and leave your thoughts and feelings to what we said. So let's get into it. First question is from A Fire in the Flesh, and which is book 3. And we said, do you think the series could have been 4 books, or could JLA have wrapped it up in 3? Like, LOL on this one, because now I think it's like 6 books. But Catherine Reb answered, call me crazy, but I actually don't mind being 4 books, as I think we needed a good chunk of time to really hate Colas. Just fair.
Yeah. We could have hated Colas, though, in book 2 when nothing happened.
We like – so the next question we had for Plated Prisoner book 5, and we said, we like to say fuck that guy when a villain is a man, but what should we say when the villain is a woman, like Kalia?
Kayla.
I know I said that wrong. What should we say when the villain is a woman, like Kayla? Catherine Webb said, fuck that bitch. This next one made me laugh. From Savannah Sweet Bueller wrote, my go-to is the good old fuck that hag.
Cackling.
Fuck that hag, or the classic fuck that bitch. It seems to be the conclusion there. From House of Earth and Blood, which is Crescent City, book 2, we said
– Book 1.
Book 1. I'm sorry. Book 1, part 2 is the episode it was on. Do you think you'll ever recover from Lily's death? And Roland Laura 11 said, not at all. She was the goat. She was.
That's like other thoughts?
No. Okay. Next question was from House of Flame and Shadow, part 2. And we said, are you happy with how Hofast ended? Would you have changed anything? Eliza Church Ward wrote, I wish the Akatar characters had more of a role in defeating the Asteri. The book felt rushed. They were rushing to the conclusion and rushing to explain everything. The ending was underwhelming. I completely agree.
You're no not notes. Wrong.
Yeah, yeah, I'm still not ready to talk about Hofast anymore.
No.
I'm Hofast out.
I'm Hofast
out. I want to pretend it didn't exist.
The next one is from Iron Flame, book 2. How did you feel about the pacing in this book? Do you also think it is set up as a TV episode like Listen with Brit said? Sabrina Diado said, pacing is too fast for my liking. I still enjoyed the book, but compared to The Queen, SJM, the pacing was too much. Interesting. I know pacing is something we always have different thoughts and feelings on. After his actions in book 2, are you ready to forgive Dane? Of course, this is coming from our Iron Flame episodes. And Sabrina also said, yes, I forgive Dane, but I don't love him. And that's fair.
That's valid. He gives strong blonde man energy.
Iron Flame, also from our Iron Flame episode, we said, do you have an unhinged theory about who the sage is? Because we do. Catherine Webb. Wow, lots of from Catherine. Hi, Catherine. So many from you today. I love that. I waved to the screen to you. She
really did. I was like, should I wave back?
No. You guys just stared at me and you're like, huh? Let's wave to you, Catherine. She said, I have not even thought about this like at all, but thank you for bringing this to my attention. I'm going to add it to my list of seemingly never-ending book-related questions. And that is all of our book-related questions we had for this episode of Book Talk Made Me. Of course, you can find us and slide into our DMs at booktalkmademe_pod for any of these unhinged conversations, or if you just want more, or you're like, you know what, we're not done talking about this. I'm diving into this now. Hilda's there ready to receive you, because it's always Hilda. And if not, Bridget and I do a pretty good job of announcing ourselves, because it is shocking when we enter the chat.
I know. At this point, I'm just like, I want to talk about this, but they're having such a great conversation. And now I feel like it's Hilda's chat with them. And I'm like, she knows us well enough to let them know what we're saying.
Yeah. I wish it did have like the iMessage feature where you could like reply back to this. So I'm like, I'm going to scroll up to like 6 points ago and say, I agreed with you, but it doesn't just come out randomly. And then, like, I slink back into the shadows because just drop my point in this conversation. Now I'm off. Anyway, so Hilda is ready to receive you and talk about all your questions. And you can find us there at booktalkmimi_pod on Instagram and TikTok, where we have been on a hiatus of a spring break, but we're coming back. So get ready for that. And to celebrate the upcoming release of Zodiac Academy, the conclusion in this 9-part series, we've got something fun planned, as we always do. So please make sure, the next 2 weeks especially, you are following us on Instagram, where we will be detailing out all the stories and the fun, cool ways we get to interact, and the contest that we're going to have. Contests, dare I say? Contest. Just the one. Fine, Hilda corrected me. Just the one contest that we're going to have be going on for all of you guys. So make sure you are following us and keep your eyes peeled for that.
So and patrons, we're going to have a special session. So more details coming. Check the patron message board.
Patreon. We're patrons.
Patreon patrons.
Because we have the theater. That's what it sounds like. Yes, to all of our Patreon patrons, thank you so much. We've got something extra special planned for you all. It's not too late to join, so you can head over to Patreon to get that going. All right, from us tonight, that was a big one. That was a big doozy of an episode. Lots to cover. Lots of things happen, as we like to say. But we'll catch you next time. So from us tonight, good night.
Good night.